All right, so are you ready to dive into 7 Days to Die?
Oh, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this one.
Me too. This book, it's not your typical read, is it?
No, not at all. It's like the author took all these different pieces of a story character's timelines and just threw them in a blender.
Yeah, and you're left trying to piece it all together like some kind of crazy puzzle.
Exactly. And just when you think you're getting a handle on things, bam, he throws you a curveball.
Like with that opening scene with Lewis Wright,
Yeah.
you think it's just a normal photo shoot.
Yeah, total misdirect. I mean, who expects things to go south that quickly?
And Harper, that photographer, he's creepy right from the start.
Oh, yeah. Totally gives off those bad vibes, especially when he starts talking about people with paranormal
And
ability.
then poof, Lewis is gone, and we're suddenly with Kelly.
Talk about a whiplash transition, but it's so effective, right?
Totally. And what's interesting is how normal Kelly's life seems at first.
Right, burst pipe, annoying landlord, family drama. It's like the calm before the storm.
And then, bam, she's dead. But not just dead. She sees her own body.
It's like she's being pulled out of herself.
Exactly. And then she's on this journey into the afterlife with this guide, Kurt.
And the imagery is so vivid, right? That descent into this massive cave, the boat ride across the lake.
Oh, and those creepy wing things, what were those?
The Votoros. They're like harbingers of danger, letting you know this isn't your grandma's heaven.
Definitely sets the tone. Then they finally reach Maesis, this city of second chances.
And it's wild, right? Like a mashup of different eras and cultures all jumbled together.
Yeah, diners next to ancient temples, talking animals, giving directions. It's nuts.
But somehow it works. And it makes you think, what would it be like to live in a place like that?
And the animals, they're not just pets. They have actual roles in this society.
Right. Like Kelly's guide, Rocco, this talking monkey.
Yeah.
He's hilarious, but you can tell he's got this deep wisdom, too.
Makes you wonder if we underestimate animals in our own worlds.
Totally. Then there's this whole system of three levels in the afterlife.
Paramesis and Katona,
Right.
like different levels of existence.
Para is for those who are done with life. Maesis is where you find your new purpose. And Katona. Well, let's just say it's not a place you want to end up.
Makes you think about how we define heaven and hell, right?
Exactly. And then there's Embra, this magic that lets souls keep their human appearance for a while.
Yeah, but it fades at twilight, which leads to some pretty awkward situations.
It's like a symbol of the transition they're going through, shedding their old lives, becoming something new.
So magic is a big deal in this world, but it's heavily regulated in Maesis.
Right. You get the sense that there's this underlying tension about how much magic should be allowed.
Like some people think it's dangerous, while others think it's a natural force that should be embraced.
Kind of like our debates about technology in the real world.
Totally. And then there's this whole backstory about Kanito and Abigail Ravenwood, these historical figures who shaped Maesis.
Their story hints at a conflict over magic, suggesting these issues have been brewing for centuries.
And then there are these powerful objects, the Necklace of Aparo and the Kanito Mask.
The author doesn't tell us exactly what they do, but you know, they're going to be important.
They're like Chekhov's guns, just waiting to go off.
Exactly. And then there's Kelly herself. She's got this unique ability that makes her a target.
But we don't know what it is yet. It's like this big mystery.
And it makes me want to keep reading to find out what her secret is.
And then there's the Twilight Fairy, this thing that takes souls to their final judgment.
It sounds pretty intense, like a one-way ticket to the unknown.
Yeah, definitely adds to the suspense. So we've got a protagonist dealing with her own mortality, this strange afterlife with its own rules, and a whole cast of characters who are both intriguing and a little bit terrifying. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think it's time to delve deeper into Kelly's early days in Miss S. Let's explore the challenges she faces, the relationships she forms, and the clues she uncovers as she tries to piece together the mystery of her early death.
Sounds good. Let's do it.
So we left Kelly trying to figure out this whole afterlife thing and why she's there in the first place.
Right, it's like she's got this 7-day deadline hanging over her head.
Exactly. And she's desperate for answers, which is why she goes to see Keziah.
Yeah, Keziah, that outlaw sorceress,
Yeah.
she's a fascinating character.
Definitely. Not your typical goody two shoes. She's got her own agenda.
And she's not afraid to bend the rules, which makes her meeting with Kelly even riskier.
Right. Especially with the Ravenwood authorities breathing down their necks.
It shows how determined Kelly is, though. She's willing to take risks to find the truth.
Totally. And then there's that whole scene with the Very Bomb smoke.
Yeah, that was intense. Like Keziah was trying to dig into Kelly's subconscious.
And what's interesting is what Keziah says about Kelly's energy being blocked.
Right. Like she's repelling magic somehow.
It's almost like she's built up these walls around herself, preventing her from connecting with her true potential.
Makes you wonder if that's why she died so young.
Maybe there's something she's not facing, something she's pushing away.
And then bam, the Ravenwood police raid. Keziah shop.
Talk about bad timing. It's like they knew Kelly was there.
And that's when we first hear about Mangary, this mysterious figure pulling the strings.
Right. It adds a whole other layer of intrigue to the story.
Like there's this secret society operating behind the scenes.
And we still don't know their motives. It's all very hush-hush.
But it's clear they're interested in Kelly and her abilities.
Absolutely. And we can't forget about those prisoners Keziah was hiding.
Yeah. What was up with that?
Yeah.
It's like she was running an underground railroad for magic users.
It definitely shows that she's not afraid to stand up for what she believes in, even if it means breaking the law.
Makes you wonder who the real bad guys are in this story.
Right. The lines between good and evil are definitely blurred.
So Kelly escapes with Hart and Penny and this mysterious sorceress.
And they end up in the Felis Museum, this place full of history and secrets.
It's like a treasure trove of information about Mises and the conflict over magic.
We learned about Abigail Ravenwood, this powerful sorceress who fought for the freedom to use magic.
And those exhibits on powerful objects like the Necklace of Aparo and the Kanito Mask.
Yeah, those are definitely Chekhov's guns just waiting to be fired.
We know they're going to be important, but we still don't know how.
It's like the author is dangling these clues in front of us, teasing us with what's to come.
And then Kelly hears her sister Grace calling her name.
Turns out Grace is trapped in this weird in-between place.
And Harper is using her as bait to lure Kelly in.
It's like he knows Kelly's weakness is her love for her family.
And it makes you wonder about the connection between the mortal and immortal worlds.
Right. Are they truly separate or can they bleed into each other?
And what happens when those boundaries are crossed?
So many questions. So we've got a race against time, a conspiracy, a protagonist torn between two worlds, and a villain who's willing to do whatever it takes to achieve his goals. Where do we go from here?
Well, I think it's time to dive into the final act of this story. We'll explore the showdown between Kelly and Harper, the true nature of her abilities, and the profound consequences of choices made in both life and death.
I can't wait. Let's do it.
So Kelly's in deep now, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. Harper's got her backed into a corner.
Using her family like that is just cruel.
It shows how far he's willing to go to get what he wants.
And that ghost town, it's the perfect setting for all this, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's like a physical representation of that blurred line between life and death.
Yeah. And those Votoros, those things are nightmare fuel.
They definitely add to the whole creep factor. But I think they represent something deeper, too.
Like what?
Like the untamed forces of the afterlife, the dangers that lurk beneath the surface.
Interesting. So things really heat up when Harper reveals what Kelly's ability actually is.
Yeah, talk about a game changer.
She's not just blocking magic, she's repelling the entire immortal world.
Exactly. Which makes her a huge threat to their way of life.
No wonder everyone's after her.
It really makes you think about the nature of power, doesn't it? How easily it can be abused.
And Harper, he's definitely crossing the line trying to use Kelly to open a permanent portal.
I mean, I get it. He's grieving. He wants his daughter back.
But still, the potential consequences are just too great.
It's like a cautionary tale about the dangers of unchecked ambition.
That scene where he uses the Necklace of Aparo on Kelly, it was rough.
So intense. You're just waiting for her to break free.
And she does. But it takes a lot out of her.
It's like she's finally realizing the true extent of her power.
But at a price.
And then we're in Katona, that prison level of the afterlife. Talk about bleak.
It's like all hope goes to die there.
I think the author chose that setting deliberately.
Right.
You know, to mirror the darkness inside Harper.
Yeah. It's like Kelly's fighting against that despair, not just for herself, but for everyone trapped there.
And she doesn't give up. Even when things look impossible.
Which is what makes her such a great character.
Totally. And in the end, it's her compassion that wins out.
Yeah, she could have destroyed Harper, but she chose to show him mercy.
Pretty powerful message, right? Even when we're hurting, we can choose a different path.
It's a reminder that we all have the capacity for both good and evil.
And the choices we make define who we are.
So the ending, it doesn't really tie everything up neatly, does it?
No, it leaves you with a lot to think about, which I think is the mark of a good book.
Yeah, you're left wondering about Kelly's future, what happened to Harper, and what it all means.
It's a story that stays with you long after you finish reading it.
Well, I think it's safe to say we both highly recommend 7 Days to Die.
Oh, absolutely. It's a must-read for anyone who enjoys a thought-provoking adventure.
All right, listeners, that's our deep dive into this incredible book. We hope you enjoyed it, and until next time, keep exploring and keep those questions coming.